And now, it's time for our weekly news round, Lutheran Radio News, with Paul Hill.
The chrism oil, which we used to anoint the king during his coronation, is vegan-friendly. It was made with olives and perfumed with sesame, rose, jasmine, cinnamon, neroli, benzoin and amber, as well as orange blossom, and will not use any ingredients from animals. Some of the ingredients used in the holy oil to anoint Charles's mother, the late Queen, in 1953, came from a musk deer, a civet cat and a sperm whale, Dr. John Hall, a retired priest of the Church of England, said in a BBC documentary in 2018. The holy oil, which will be used to anoint Charles on May the 6th this year, was consecrated in Jerusalem last Friday. A ceremony to make the oil sacred took place in the Church of the Holy Sepulchre and was led by the Patriarch of Jerusalem, His Beatitude Patriarch Theophilus III, and the Anglican Archbishop in Jerusalem, the Most Reverend Hossam Naum. It has been created using olives harvested from two groves on the Mount of Olives at the Monastery of Mary Magdalene and the Monastery of the Ascension. Mr. Naum said on Friday he had felt a deep sense of spiritual experience. The Archbishop added, "So what has been happening today? I think there is a thread that this, the consecration of the oil for the enthronement and the coronation, it brings about something of a deep and profound meaning, both to King Charles, to the Church and Jerusalem, to the Holy Land, and I think to the whole world." Charles has strong links with the Holy Land because his grandmother, Princess Alice, who harboured a Jewish family in Greece during the Second World War, is buried at the Russian Orthodox Church of St. Mary Magdalene in Jerusalem. He last visited her tomb in 2020 during a visit to Israel and the occupied Palestinian territories and laid flowers. The oil is stored in a bottle and traditionally held in great secrecy by the Dean of Westminster at Westminster Abbey. During the ceremony, it is kept in a solid gold flask called an ampulla, an artifact shaped like an eagle. The anointing of a new monarch is so sacred, it takes place under a canopy, transforming the moment into a deeply personal experience between the sovereign and God. The king will also receive the orb, coronation ring and scepter, and will be crowned with the majestic St. Edward's crown and blessed during the historic ceremony. Camilla will also be anointed with holy oil and crowned, just like the Queen Mother was when she was crowned Queen in 1937. However, the controversial Kohinoor diamond will not feature in the crown. The famous gem was first set in a cross at the front of Queen Mary's crown when it was worn at her coronation in 1911, but it was replaced by a replica in 1937 when the original was moved to the Queen Mother's crown for her and George VI's coronation. Neither the original nor the replica would be used in the coronation of the king and Camilla, with diamonds from the late queen's personal collection used instead, a Buckingham Palace spokesman said. The Kohinoor was seized by the East India Company after its victory in the Second Anglo-Sikh War of 1849. It was given to Queen Victoria and has remained in the crown used ever since. The governing party of Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi is reported to have expressed concern that the famous gem would provide an unwelcome reminder of the British Empire. Camilla is set to become the first consort since the 18th century to reuse a crown at a coronation. The number of schoolchildren affected by poisonings in Iran has climbed to more than 5,000, a lawmaker investigating the cases has revealed. The shocking state of poisonings has targeted mainly female pupils since it was first seen in late November, with some needing hospital treatment. The mystery poisonings have gripped Iran, triggering a wave of angry protests and pleas from distressed parents for action from the authorities. They have also sparked international condemnation, as well as calls from the West for an independent investigation amid concerns that extremist religious groups want women and girls out of the classroom. The White House said that investigating the poisonings could fall under the mandate of the United Nations. Mohammed Hassan Asafari, a member of the Parliamentary Fact-Finding Committee, which is currently looking into the poisonings, told the ISNA news agency this week, 25 provinces and approximately 230 schools have been affected, and more than 5,000 schoolboys and schoolgirls poisoned. Various tests are being carried out to identify the type and cause of the poisonings. So far, no specific information has been obtained regarding the type of poison used. The first cases were reported soon after the state of nationwide protest sparked by the death of Iranian Kurd Mahsa Amini, 22, following her arrest for allegedly breaching Iran's strict dress code for women. If these poisonings are related to participation in protest, then it is well within the mandate of the UN Independent International Fact-Finding Mission on Iran to investigate, said White House spokesman Karine Jean-Pierre. She further called for a credible, independent investigation into the poisonings. Scores of schools have been hit by the suspicious attacks, with pupils suffering symptoms ranging from shortness of breath to nausea and vertigo after reporting unpleasant odors on school premises. Calling the poisonings an unforgivable crime, Iran's supreme leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei gave orders last Monday for the perpetrators to be tracked down without mercy. According to the state-run IRNA news agency, Khamenei said, "If the poisoning of students is proven, those behind this crime should be sentenced to capital punishment, and there will be no amnesty for them." It was the first time the country's supreme leader, who has the final say on all matters of state, has spoken publicly about the suspected poisonings. Last week, President Ebrahim Raisi tasked the Interior Ministry with providing continuous updates on the investigation. The ministry has announced no arrests so far, even as new cases continue to be reported. In less than 5% of the students transferred to hospital, irritant materials were found which led to their ill health, the ministry said in its latest update on Monday. Fortunately, so far, no toxic or dangerous substances have been found in any of the students transferred to medical centres. The latest case, reported by the ISNA news agency, involved 40 pupils, all of them female, in the restive southeastern city of Zahedan. The first cases were reported in Iran's Shiite clerical capital of Qom in late November, a month after the Amini protests that later spread to universities and schools. On Tuesday, Tehran prosecutor Ali Salehi warned that those who spread lies and rumors about the poisonings, that they will be dealt with decisively and legally, the judiciary's Mizan online website reported. Officials have only acknowledged the incidents in recent weeks and have provided no details on who may be behind the attacks or what chemicals, if any, have been used. Like neighboring Afghanistan, Iran has no history of religious extremists targeting women's education, but these suspected attacks have been seen by some commentators as part of an extremist response to the protests led by women and girls that have swept Iran in recent months. Protests were sparked across the country and the world following the death of Mahsa Amini, who died under suspicious circumstances in police custody in September. Over the weekend, fresh protests against the suspected poisonings were seen in Iran and around the world. Worried parents protested in Iran's capital Tehran and other cities on Saturday, with a number gathering outside an education ministry's building in western Tehran, according to Reuters. Campfire songs enjoyed by generations of girl guides have had their lyrics changed to omit references to God as part of an inclusivity drive. In a now-deleted blog post, Girl Guiding said that the tradition of singing songs could have references that have been hurtful to people and suggested groups could make changes so everyone can join in. The organization behind Rainbow, Brownie, Guides and Ranger groups gave tips from members on how to make the songs inclusive for everyone. In one example, a group changed the lyrics of the traditional camp song Brownie Bells to remove references to religion. The original version of Brownie Bells stated, "O Lord, our God, thy children call, grant us thy peace and bless us all, good night." However, the altered version reads, "Time for the end, our meeting's past, Brownies is great, time flies so fast, good night. I'm a brownie, you're a brownie, brownies all around the world, good night brownies everywhere." Another group leader named on the blog as Josie said, "We have a mixture of religious beliefs in our unit, so we change the words to brownie bells to all around the world. The brownies say we do good deeds throughout the day because they love being part of a global sisterhood." Others went further, with a leader named Emma saying she had stopped singing some songs such as Land of the Silver Birch, the Canadian folk song, and Five Little Monkeys, the nursery rhyme, because of their colonial and racist histories. She said, "We've stopped singing any songs that have questionable history. Songs like Land of the Silver Birch, written to imitate Native American culture but not respectful of their song culture, and Five Little Monkeys, which has a history in minstrel songs which was sung wearing blackface." The blog post added, "Making accommodations, no longer singing racist and colonial songs, or changing traditionally faith-based songs to be non-religious isn't about taking away traditions of girl guiding. Instead, making changes to the songs we sing about is about making every girl in a unit feel welcome." The girl guiding movement defended the update, saying it had made the traditional song inclusive of all religions. However, Kieran Kelly of the Christian Institute criticized the decision. He told the Mail on Sunday, "The Girl Guides and Scouts should remember that their founders, Robert Baden Powell and his sister Agnes, were motivated by their faith. Erasing their past and our traditions do not promote greater inclusion or diversity. Quite the opposite. The many Christian members of the Girl Guides will certainly question how welcome they really are. I hope they reconsider this decision." Toby Young, the General Secretary of the Free Speech Union, said, "No British institution, however revered, is safe from the woke thought police. It was only a matter of time before they came for the Girl Guides. Funnily enough, this may turn out to be quite helpful to those of us trying to defend free speech. Censoring the lyrics of the Girl Guide songs is a step too far, like sanitizing the works of Roald Dahl." A Girl Guiding spokesman said, "We are proud to be an inclusive organization. Our ambition for diversity and inclusion is for Girl Guiding to be a place where everyone is welcome and free to be themselves, whoever they are and wherever they're from. As part of our commitment, it's important we consider elements of our heritage that may not illustrate our values and ethos of today, and how they may be excluding girls or volunteers from taking part or feeling truly welcome. We encourage all members to consider how they can do their part to support our ambition to be a place where everyone has an equal sense of belonging." The Home Secretary will launch a crackdown on police needlessly recording non-crime hate incidents in the wake of a row over the handling of the Quran at a West Yorkshire school. Last year, the College of Policing, the police professional standards body, changed its guidance to stop officers recording incidents that do not amount to a crime. Despite this, officers said an incident in which the Muslim holy book was damaged was a non-crime hate incident. Suella Braverman's intervention comes after the 14-year-old schoolboy, who is reportedly autistic, received death threats after a copy of the Quran was damaged. The book was dropped and sustained minor damage, with police called in to investigate the incident and said no crime had been committed. It is not clear who dropped the book or how it was damaged at Kettlethorpe High School in Wakefield. Officers recorded it as a non-crime hate incident, used to note incidents which failed to meet the criminal threshold. However, Whitehall sources confirmed to the Telegraph on Sunday night that as a result of the row, Ms. Braverman will issue new guidance later this month to remind police forces only to record non-crime hate incidents where it's proportionate and absolutely necessary. She will also tell police to remove from their records any such incidents which do not meet that strict threshold to prevent them showing up in future enhanced police checks. Meanwhile, the Muslim Council of Britain has criticised the Home Secretary, accusing her of ignoring the common sense approach to establish the full facts of the incident. They said she instead twisted a local issue from a school playground to fit pre-existing national agendas and ideologies. The revised statutory code of practice comes in the wake of the controversy over the Quran incident. Ms. Braverman has already made clear that she believes the police overreacted to the incident, and that she believes that the way in which non-crime hate incidents are recorded are insufficient and require reform. She also expressed her deep concern over the incident at the school in Wakefield over the weekend, and said it is appalling that an autistic schoolboy has received death threats. Early this week, it emerged that West Yorkshire Police became involved in the incident after the Year 10 pupil bought a copy of the Islamic holy book into his school as a forfeit for losing a Call of Duty video game. However, the book was dropped on the floor, causing a small tear on the cover and scuffing to some pages. Muslims are taught to handle the Quran with respect and care, and in some cases many wash their hands before touching it. Separately, four pupils were also suspended from the school after it was dropped, prompting criticism from humanist and free speech campaign groups. And finally, after a very, very long sermon, the parishioners quietly filed out of the church to Pastor Jamie. Towards the end of the departing queue was a thoughtful person who always commented on the sermons. "Pastor," she said, "today your sermon reminded me of the peace and love of God." Pastor Jamie was thrilled. "Nobody has ever said anything like that about my preaching before. Tell me why." "Because," she said, "it endured forever."
My name is Paul Hill. Thank you for listening to Lutheran Radio UK. Lutheran Radio News will be back next Friday. Until then, every blessing to you and goodbye for now.